start with something from last week's Sedra, and then if there's time to speak about this coming week's Sedra. You're all familiar with the first Rashi in the Torah. Lohoya HaTorah LaHaskil Ela Me'achodesh Azel Lachem Shehi Mitzvah Rishonesh and Itztavu Bo Yisrael. Rashi quotes a medrash in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak that the Torah should have started from the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people, since the Torah is basically a book of mitzvot, so it should have established its character right away in the beginning, and started with the first mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people collectively, which is the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, of proclaiming a new month and establishing a new month, which is in Parshas Bo. And why did it start with Bereishis? Rashi answers in the name of the of Rabbi Yitzchak that Koach Ma'isot Higid L'Amo Losei Slohem Nachlas Goyim. I pasuk it to Tehillim. God made known the power of his deeds to his nation in order to give them the land that had been occupied by seven nations. And in case, theoretically speaking, the Goyim would ever come and claim that we stole Eretz Israel, that we're a bunch of thieves, we took a land that belonged to seven nations and conquered it and were occupiers, conquerors, whatever, were thieves. So we have an answer. Bereishis Bara Elokim. God created the world. He gave it to you temporarily, took it away from you and gave it to us. There are obviously a lot of questions on that. First of all, will it help? I am sure that if the Israeli ambassador in the United Nations got up tomorrow and said, you know, we've been debating and arguing about who this land belongs to, two states, one state, I forgot to say something. Bereishis Bara Elokim Es HaShemayim Es HaAretz. God created the heavens and the earth, and he gave them the land temporarily, took it away from them, gave it to us. It's our land. I doubt very much if all of the Arab states, or for that matter anybody else, would get up and say, all right, why don't you say that before? It'd save a lot of bother and trouble. If we would have known that, we wouldn't have made any trouble. Fine, it's your land, take it. I doubt very much that it would be nice if you tried it, but it wouldn't help. So what's it going to help? Secondly, the truth is that we never used that argument, even when we were faced with that claim. The Gemara says that once in history, the Goyim that occupied this land, the Canaanim, took us to a world court in front of Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great, who ruled over most of the world, had a world court where nations could bring their grievances. And we were brought to that world court by the Canaanim, and they said that we are going to bring a proof from your Torah that it's our land. It says, Eretz Canaan Ligvuloseha, the land of Canaan. We're Canaan. It's our land. Your Torah says that it's our land. So they sent a representative. The rabbi sent a representative to represent the Jewish people. His name was Gevia ben Psisa. And you would expect, this is it. This is the time that Bereishis has been waiting for. What would be his counter-argument? He says, Bereishis Bara Elokim, God created the world. He gave it to you temporarily, took it away from you, gave it to us. But he didn't say that. You know what his argument was? He said, okay, let's assume that it's your land. Eretz Canaan, you're right, the Torah says your land. But the Torah also says that you people are slaves to us. Canaan is Eved Avadim Yeliechem. He's a slave to his brothers. And whatever a slave owns belongs to his master. So you can own Eretz Israel, but we own you. So we own you, and we own the land, and it's been a while since you've served us. We'd like, you know, back money for all the time that you didn't serve us. And they ran away, and it was a Shemitah, and there was a scarcity of vegetables during Shemitah, and they had all this goyish produce to be able to eat. So the question is, if the whole reason why the book of Bereishis was written, to give us a claim to Eretz Israel, when we needed that claim? Why didn't we use it? Why did we use something else? Thirdly, doesn't answer the question. We didn't conquer Eretz Yisrael for 14 years after we got there. 7 years we conquered it, 7 years we settled it. So we didn't really take ownership of Eretz Yisrael for 14 years after we got there, which was 54 years after the Torah was given. So why did the Torah have to start from Bereishis in order to give us a claim on Eretz Yisrael? There was plenty of time to give us a claim on Eretz Yisrael at the end of the Torah. It didn't have to be the beginning. The Torah could have started from the first mitzvah, and then, in the end, have a little asterisk with a footnote. By the way, God created the world, and He gave Eretz Yisrael to them temporarily, took it away from them, gave it to us. Why did it have to be the beginning? And lastly, why do we need the whole Sefer Bereishis? It will be enough just to tell me that God created the world and He gave us Eretz Yisrael, which is up to Parshas Lech Lecha. All the other Parshios from Lech Lecha on, after God promised Avraham Avinu that He would give Eretz Yisrael to His children, is superfluous. What do we have to know about Esav and Yaakov and the brothers and Yosef and all these things? What do you got for? The whole purpose of Sefer Bereishis and why the Torah didn't start from the first mitzvah is only to give us a claim to Eretz Yisrael, then why so much? In the past, I've answered this in a different way, and tonight I want to give you a new answer to all these questions and to why the Torah starts from Bereishis and why this is our claim to Eretz Yisrael. In order to understand that, I want to start with a lengthy introduction to the answer. Sefer Bereishis has another name to it. Aside from Sefer Bereishis, it's called Sefer HaYosher, the book of the straight ones, because the Avos HaKadoshim were called Yeshorim. They were called straight people. And therefore, this is the book of the Yeshorim, Sefer HaYosher. This is the book that describes the lives of our Avos. Now, what does it mean to be a Yosher? What does that mean? A straight person. Why were the Avos called Yesharim? So there are various explanations. I'd like to base what I'm going to say on a Rambam. The Rambam, interestingly, at the end of the laws of Shemitah and Yovel, asks the following question. He says, why didn't the tribe of Levi get a share in Eretz Yisrael? Why didn't they go to war? Why don't they go into battle? He says, because they are God's army. And they are set aside to serve God directly. And being God's army, they are not to be involved in any other mundane pursuit except teaching Torah, learning Torah, and serving in the Beis HaMikdash and so on. And then the Rambam goes on and says, and it's not only the tribe of Levi, it's not only if you're born a Levi or a Kohen that this applies to you, but any human being who wants to separate himself from all the mundane pursuits of this world and to remain straight, Yosher, like God created him, and not to go after all the mundane pursuits that people pursue, then that person also becomes an honorary member of the tribe of Levi. He becomes holy of holies, and he will be able to devote himself totally to Torah, to serving God, to teaching Torah, to learning Torah. And God will provide for him like he provides for the Levian. In other words, the Jewish people support that person. That's a Rambam. The Rambam basically says that what is a Yosher? Based on the sentence in Kohelis that says, "Elokim asa es ha'adam yosher," God made man straight. V'hein bikshu chishbonos rabu, but they went and pursued many other pursuits. Yosher means to be the way that God created us, totally devoted to God, and not to look for other pursuits that are selfish pursuits. Not necessarily negative, but instead of being totally devoted to God, straight, the way that God created, a person who is interested in pursuing other selfish pursuits, his own personal pursuits, that's not called yashar. That's not straight the way that God made it. Now, the Nefesh HaChaim says that what is the idea of God made a person straight, and he looked to other things. He says like this, that before the sin, I'm enhancing what he says a little bit, but this is basically the gist of his message. Before the sin of Adam and Chava, people were straight, totally devoted to God. They had free choice, but their free choice was basically objective, not subjective. It was a choice between truth and falsehood. You could choose falsehood, but it was a very intellectual, external choice, nothing inside, subjective, that pushed a person to one way or the other. You could intellectually, objectively make a choice, and that's what Chava did. Chava reasoned that it was good to eat from the tree, which God said not to, and she ate from it. But there was no inner Yetzer Hara pushing her. There was an outside Yetzer Hara. Satan argued with her, presented her with reasons and reasoning why it's the proper thing to do, even though God said not to do it. But it was a choice between truth and falsehood. Truth and falsehood are absolutes. Either it's true or it's not true. You can choose to do false. You can choose to jump into a fire and commit suicide too. There's nothing inwardly, usually, that pushes a person to do that. It's an intellectual choice. Okay, unless you're a sick person or whatever. Talking about a normal, healthy person does not choose to commit suicide because something's driving him to do it. He intellectually can decide he wants to end his life, and that's it. So there was an external Yetzer Hara represented by the snake. But it wasn't internal. There was nothing subjectively pushing a person. After the sin, there became an inner Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara became internalized, and now there became a choice not between truth and falsehood, but between good and bad. Good and bad is not the same thing as true and false. True and false is absolute. Either it's true or it's false. It can't be partially false or partially true. The part that's not true is false, and the part that's not false is true. It's 100% true and 100% false, different parts. But you can't have something that's partially true and partially false. The false part is 100% false, and the true part is 100% true. But you can have something that is relatively good compared to something worse than it, and relatively bad compared to something better than it. Good and bad are relative terms. They're not absolute. And therefore, because they're not absolute, they're subjective. And therefore, there's an inner Yetzer Hara, where a person sees what he wants to see. He feels what's good based on personal desire, right? And he mixes in a lot of selfish, not selfless reasoning, but selfish reasoning. What's good for me? What I would like to do. And that colors his view to see good and bad, sometimes very distorted. So, therefore, from the time of the sin of Adam and Chava, nothing was absolute anymore. There's always a little bit of good in every bad, and a little bit of bad in every good. And you have to discern, relatively speaking, what is the predominant thing. Does the good outweigh the bad, or the bad outweigh the good? That, therefore, the straight way was what it was like before people started having an inner Yetzer Hara and subjective free choice and selfish motives. The Sfas Emes says that the idea of Yashar was that people were totally devoted to God selflessly. And the Heim Bikshu Cheshbon Oslabin means they added other selfish desires, not being selfless anymore. And the Hanim Yafos puts it in a little bit different perspective, same idea. He said, before the sin, everything was L'shem Shamayim. Everything was for the sake of heaven. After the sin, there were other cheshbonos. What does it say? Asbo v'nase cheshbonos shel olam. In order not to sin and to do what's right, you have to make cheshbonos. You have to make, what's the word I'm looking for? What? Calculations, right, very good. Calculations. One of the calculations to see where the reward outweighs the loss. Schar mitzvah kenegad, the reward of the mitzvah opposite the loss that you think you're incurred by doing it, or the benefit of the aveira opposite the loss you're going to incur by doing it. But that's very selfish. That's a very not selfless cheshbon. What am I going to gain? How am I going to end up better off or worse off? It's a very self-centered cheshbon. So yasher means my intentions were totally altruistic, totally for the sake of the Ribbono Shel Olam, for the sake of heaven. Afterwards, people bikshu cheshbonos rabim, not bad cheshbonos, good cheshbonos, to do good things. But the cheshbonos were no longer selfless. They're self-centered. They're selfish. Nobody was before, but he had a few hours. No,
the
internal Yetzirah. What?
Right.
They had a few hours of that ideal situation where the free choice was external. Once they sinned, that started what we know, and it applied to them too. We're talking now about how God made people originally. Had they not made that sin originally, then the whole makeup of the world would have been different. God made people straight. Straight meaning totally devoted, being able to function selflessly. And they sought other calculations, and those other calculations introduced not a selfless, total devotion to the Ribbono Shel Olam, but other calculations that are basically self-centered. That's the basic idea. And therefore, somebody who wants to free himself of all those calculations and be totally devoted to God the way that God intended to begin with, that's called a yasher. That is a straight person. That's the person who reverts back to the way that God intended people to be to begin with. Not everybody can do that. And if you can't do that, then use those calculations in a positive way. It's good to have self-centered calculations. What am I going to gain? What's better for me? But it's not the ideal. The ideal would be the way that God made you, totally selfless, totally devoted, dveikus b'Hashem, totally connected to God. Okay. And therefore, up until a certain point, God left it that people, if they wanted to, could regain that original, at least the potential for that original creation. In other words, Adam, the original man, lost it. But it was up for grabs. And someone, with his own diligence and tremendous amount of devotion to God, could regain it, and regain it to a point where he passed it on to his children. And they would have that potential too. The only one in the world who was able to regain the potential for what the original people were supposed to be was Avraham Avinu. He became the Adam, right? The replacement of Adam HaRishon. Adam HaGadol BaAnokim refers to Avraham Avinu. And he was able to purify his soul to a point where he passed it on to his children, to Yitzchak, to Yaakov, and from there it went to all the Jewish people. We have that potential. If we want to, we can access that neshama that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, our avos, and imos, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, bequeathed us, and we can have that total devotion to God. We have that ability. The nations of the world as a nation don't have that ability. As individuals, maybe yes. There may be individuals even amongst the nations of the world who can totally devote themselves. But the total devotion by a nation is only the Jewish people. We have that power because our avos were yesharim. They were straight people, totally devoted. That's why it says that the Avos were the Merkava Lashkina. They were like a chariot that brought God's presence to the world. Their entire existence was totally selfless and totally devoted to God, totally committed to God, and their entire purpose wasn't anything personal. It was all to bring God's presence into the world. And because they reached that level, they passed it on, potentially, to every Jew. Every Jew has a portion of his neshama that he can access. And as a Jew, as the Jewish nation, that's why it says, Atem Kruyim Adam. You as a nation are called Adam. You are the replacement of that original man, as a nation. Again, individual Goyim can also reach that level sometimes. They choose. And individual Jews cannot have that level. But as a nation, the Jewish people are called Adam because we are the replacement of Adam HaRishon as a nation, and no one else, no other nation is called Adam. Elohim also es ha Adam Yashar. God made the man straight, but hang that ha Adam, right, the people that we know, the ones you can point at, ha Adam, they have a lot of other calculations. Not selfless. Not totally devoted to God. Now, so therefore, the Jewish people have this ability to be totally devoted to the Rabban Shalom, to be Yesharim. We are Yesharim in the sense straight, that we have that direct, straight connection to God if we choose to access it, and we're the only nation in the world that has that potential as a nation. Therefore, we were given a land that is conducive to that total devotion to God. That land is called Eretz Israel because it's our land, but it's also called another name, Eretz Canaan. Why is it called Eretz Canaan? Because Canaan has a connection to the word Kenia. Kenia means to be subdued, subservient, hachno'a. Canaan is a slave. He became a slave to other human beings. The proverbial slave, Canaan, Eved Avodim Yaliecha. He is subservient to his other brothers. That is the nation of Canaan. But this is the land of Canaan. It's a land that is conducive to slaves, to people subservient. To the Jewish people were subservient to God, God's slaves. Avdei Hashem. Halleluka, hallelujah, Avdei Hashem. We are God's slaves. It also was temporarily conducive to human slaves. It's a land that's conducive to people who are subservient, subdued, and totally devoted to somebody else. So when it's the Jewish peoples, it's the people who are totally subservient to God. When it belonged to people who were not subservient to God, but subservient to other human beings, it was the land of Canaan for the Canaan. So God gave it to them temporarily because it fit them as being subservient to other human beings. It fits us as being subservient to God. And therefore, vis-a-vis us, Eretz Israel is the place where a person can be devoted to God in every aspect of life. Every aspect of life can be done l'shem shamayim, which is difficult in Chutz Laretz. It's a very interesting subsofer. The subsofer says like this, and it's really very, very strange, according to what we see today. Let's see in 1 second why. There's an argument in the Gemara between Rabbi Yishmael and Shem Bar Yochai. What is the ideal path that a person should pursue? On the one hand, it says that a person should be totally involved in learning Torah all the time. That doesn't leave too much time not to be meditating on Torah, day and night. Yet, the Torah says that you can have a profession and be involved in agriculture, right? Gathering your crops. So obviously, when you're planting, plowing, and gathering in your crops, meaning that you produce them, you're not, what's it called, not learning Torah. So Rishmuel says the resolution of that seeming contradiction is, Hanegi Moem Minitera Heretz. Dupo. You can't learn Torah all the time. but you can combine the Torah with a worldly occupation. And if you fulfill that worldly occupation properly for the sake of learning Torah, I'm earning a living in order that I can be able to live, and I can be able to pay my rent, and pay my tuitions, and whatever else, and eat. And that way I'll be able to learn Torah and observe the Torah, so everything I do is for the sake of learning Torah and observing Torah, so it all becomes part of the same process. But part of the time, I'm not learning Torah. I'm involved in worldly pursuits. That's what Yeshua. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, no, ideally a person should be able to devote himself totally to learning Torah. When we are on the level of doing God's will totally, then we'll be able to learn Torah totally, and the nations of the world will support us. Other people support us. But when we're not on that level, then we have to work. Then we have to support ourselves. That's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Halachically, the Gemara says, the majority of people have to follow Rabbi Yishmael, and there have to be individuals who are like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. That's the Gemara. Says it some so. This argument is only outside of Eretz Yisrael. Not in Eretz Yisrael. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Yishmael says that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says that you can be devoted totally to learning Torah. That's only outside of Eretz Yisrael. But in Eretz Yisrael, that can't be. Because in Eretz Yisrael, everything's a mitzvah. Anything you'll do, a profession, is part of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, settling the land and being settled in the land. And it's not only agriculture that is that mitzvah, but a person is a shoemaker in Eretz Yisrael. So by being a shoemaker, he is helping himself become settled in the land by having a parnasa. And he's helping other people because they have shoes. If he can't get shoes in Eretz Yisrael, he can't be settled here. So he needs shoemakers. So any profession that helps to settle the people in the land and settle the person who's involved in that profession in the land is a mitzvah. So you can't say, well, I'm going to learn Torah and not put on tefillin. You have to put on tefillin. You have to observe the Torah too. So you can't use learning Torah as an excuse not to fulfill mitzvahs. And since in Eretz Yisrael, every pursuit can be a mitzvah, totally devoted to God, so you have to be involved in that. So in Eretz Yisrael, you can't sit and learn Torah all the time. You have to be involved in other things, because all of those things are mitzvahs, just like putting on tefillin. In Chutz La'aretz, there's no specific mitzvah to be a shoemaker. It's just earning a living. So there, you're allowed to devote yourself totally to Torah, and God will provide your living some other way. But in Eretz Yisrael, it's not an excuse. You have to be involved because these things are mitzvahs. And they're no less a mitzvah than putting on tefillin, says the Chasam Sofer. It comes out that kol olim and not having a profession is miyuchat for Chutz La'aretz. And Eretz Yisrael, here's the place where you have to work and be involved in the world too, in addition to learning. It's the way we see the world is just the opposite. But in any case, that's what the Chasam Sofer says. Therefore, Eretz Yisrael is a place that is made for a nation that can totally, selflessly dedicate themselves totally to God with no personal, selfish motivation. I'm not working because I want to earn money. I'm working because of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And being settled in the land is itself a mitzvah. I'm not doing it for my own selfish purpose. I'm doing it selflessly because that's what Klal Yisrael as a nation have the potential to be in Eretz Yisrael. And that's what Eretz Yisrael was made for. And therefore, Rashi is saying is the following. It's not if they're wicked people. We're not talking about that. We're talking about Goyim that Taka believe in the Torah. They're bringing proof from the Torah. Goyim that believe in God and believe in the Torah. And they come and they claim that this land is for them. It's not just for us. This land was given to them. And they also can be totally subservient to God. So we tell them that's not the case. God
God created the world, that he apportioned every land to the nation that fits that land. He gave it to you temporarily because you fit the land, not because you're totally devoted to God, because you're subservient to other people. And you can't reach, as a nation, that total devotion to God. You have to serve God through the Jewish people, by being subservient to the Jewish people and creating the infrastructure that we can benefit from. That's the nations of the world, the best of them. And if they do that, they'll get a share in the world to come to, and they become our partners. But they are not totally devoted to God. They're totally devoted to us, and we're totally devoted to God. It's not possible. Sefer HaYosher, that's Sefer Bereishis, it says that only the children of the Avos, or Yisharim, the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, can reach that level as a nation. And therefore, as a nation, we got Eretz Yisrael. It's not for you. So we're talking about Goyim that believe in the Torah, that believe in God, that will accept this answer. So the answer is for them. The answer is, you're not on that level as a people because you are not Yisharim. You're people who, as a nation, can only achieve the selfish motivation, not the selfless motivation. Not as as individuals, maybe, not as a nation. And therefore, that's exactly the answer that Gevir ben Tzisa said. Eretz Canaan, right? You're right. It's called Eretz Canaan, and it's a land for people who are subservient. But your subservience is different than ours. Our subservience is to God. Your subservience is to your brothers, to other people, to us. And through us, you can connect into God. But it's not a direct connection. It's connecting into us. You're slaves. You're subservient to the Jewish people. We're subservient to God. Through that, you get your connection to the Rebbe Shalom, not directly. And therefore, the land's not for you. The land's for us. We have other lands. That's the answer. That's why it says that it was a Shemitah year. Shemitah is the mitzvah par excellence of total devotion to God. An entire year where you say, it's not even my land. Right? God says, don't plant, don't plow, don't harvest. The produce is hefker, belongs to everybody. For a year, I'm able to do that only if I can be selflessly devoted to God. So the Goyim left their things, and we benefited Shemitah because that's the answer. The answer is Eretz Yisrael is fitting only for the Jewish people because we are Yisharim. And that's what Sefer Bereishis tells us. The whole Sefer Bereishis tells me that God created the world and he can give the land to whom he sees fit. You got it temporarily because, yes, it's a land of subservient people, but you are subservient to other people. And we're subservient to the Rebbe Shalom, that's why he gave it to us. How do I know that? From the whole Sefer Bereishis. Study the lives of the Avos, you'll see they were selfless people. They were able to totally devote themselves to the Rebbe Shalom, and if you understand that properly, I don't know what that was, but it didn't sound good. What? Yep. They're all working. So that is the answer, and that's why the Torah. There's one more question here, and the question is, why did God give us Eretz Yisrael in such a suspicious way? If God was concerned that the nations of the world will think that we are Ganav and we stole their land, we stole something that is was meant for them, that is fitting for them, and we took it over. Okay? Not only did we take it, conquer it, but we murdered their men, women, and children, little babies. Right? They had to kill every man, woman, and child. So it looks pretty bad that the Rebbeinu Shalom told us, look, I want you to conquer this land. I want you to kill men, women, and children. And then I'm going to write the Sefer Bereishis to answer the question. If they look and say, you're a bunch of Ganavim, we have an answer. The answer is Bereishis. Wouldn't it have been better if God was concerned how the Goyim look at us and that they're going to think that we're a bunch of Ganavim? Wouldn't it have been better for God to give us Eretz Yisrael in a less suspicious way? I mean, I could think of two ways that we could have gotten this land naturally without any problem. One, God could have made a plague Okay, there are plenty of plagues that decimate, the Black Plague decimated most of Europe. So God could have made a plague, natural, that would have decimated the entire population of Canaan before we came here. We find all these dead bodies. We go through a mass burial, and the world looks at us and says, wow, we did a favor. We buried all these people. We didn't kill them. We came into our land. Everybody was dead. We didn't conquer anybody's land. We took a land from a bunch of dead bodies. And we not only that, we did a service to the world. We buried the bodies. And no more questions. We didn't conquer a land that belonged to seven nations. They all were dead. Couldn't God do that? Why did he not kill them and make us kill them? And then make us look like Donovan and need to say preparations to let us know, no, you're not Donovan. It's my land. And another way, God could have made the economic situation here in Israel so bad that all of the Canaanim would have left here and opened up falafel shops in New York. Right? Natural. Right? Possible. Right? That would have been a natural phenomenon. We would come to a land. Nobody was here. Right? Everybody was driving cabs or selling falafel in Kutz Laretz. And we took over the land. Why did the Ribbono Shel Olam make us kill these people, conquer their land, and then have to have safer brachos to justify, to let us know we're not Ganovim? That's exactly the point. The point is that the only way that you can conquer a land like that and kill men, women, and children is if you are totally devoted to God and have no ulterior motives, no personal vendetta. Because if you kill these people because you didn't like them, for any personal reason, you're murderers. The only way it's justified is because God said to do it, and God gave them life, and God can take away the life, and God can tell you what to do, and you can't, you have no option to say no. So if you did it totally to fulfill God's will, then you're not gun of him, and you're not murderers, and you, that's it, that's God's will. He decides who gets what, and who deserves what, and who is proper to have that land or not have that land. But if you can't be totally devoted to God, and you mix in your own feelings, and your own feelings are that you want to kill these people, you get some kind of thrill out of killing these people, whatever it may be, you don't like them, then you're murderers. Then that's not total devotion to God. That's cheshbon osrav. That's your own calculation. And then there's no justification at all. So God gave it in a way that it's clear that the only claim we have to this land is because we're totally subservient and totally selflessly dedicated to God. And if he tells us to murder men, women, and children, we have to do it. We have no personal vendetta, and we did it because God said to do it. And he has a right to tell us to do it because he gave these people life. He can take away their life, even the baby. But if we did it for any personal reason, what? Because he wanted to make it clear that the only claim we have on this land is if we tackle or so totally subservient to God. Because if we're not, then we're taka ganov, then we're taka murderers. The only claim we have is because we were able to totally selflessly fulfill what God said. That gave us the claim. And that's why this land is ours. That's why it belongs to us. That's the idea. And that's why we need the whole Seder Bereishis to let us know what that selfless devotion, to learn from our avos, what they created that now became the nachala, the inheritance of the Jewish people. That's, in a nutshell, the idea. And practically speaking, I suggested to the people by me that this is all very lofty ideas. But to bring it down more to the world of action, if a person once a day, once a week, would think of doing one thing selflessly, we're not on that level. Most of the things we do with calculations of what's better for me, what's not good for me, whatever. But if one time a day, or at least one time a week, a person does something totally selflessly, no cheshbon of himself, totally devoted to the Ribbono Shel Olam, at least we can bring this down to a somewhat of a practical idea and give us more of a claim there. It's just and mitzvah goreres mitzvah. The more you do it, the more it drags along other times that you'll be able to do things selflessly too. And in that respect, be the kind of people that this land was made for. That's the idea. Okay, well, the thing is, he says...
Will he have a requirement for all the learning and technical skills?
Okay, yes and no. Because Sam Sofer adds one qualification. That only applies when most Jews are living here, and there's a Beis HaMikdash, and there's a mitzvah of Minat Torah, of Yishuv Eretz Israel, and Mitzvahs and Maestras, whatever it may be. But as long as we're still in Galus and we're not totally settled in this land altogether, then it may not apply here now either. That's a possibility, because Rav Sofer does mention Kishi Yisrael, Shruyim Alat Masam, and when the ideal situation exists. So I don't know what he would say if he was here today. But it's very interesting to know that ideally, right, total devotion to learning Torah is only in Chutz Laretz, and here you have to combine it with something because everything's a mitzvah.